Payne and Pendergast with you with Brandon Scott in place of Seth Payne. Seth out Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. B. Scott will be in. We've got training camp coverage for you beginning at 6 a.m. on Wednesday. The Texans hit the field, and we're off and running. The 2025 season, already in year three of the D'Amico Ryans, C.J. Stroud era.
Time flies when you're having fun.
It does, man. And it has been fun. It's been a fun first couple years, and this should be a hell of a training camp. A lot of new faces, but a lot of old ones as well. And looking forward to having all that coverage for you, not just on the on Sports Radio 610 and on the Odyssey app, but obviously be following all of our social media as well. And we'll have you covered morning, noon, afternoon, and night.
Yeah,
here at Sports Radio 610.
And we're on TikTok now. Since I'm, you know, you're talking about it, I do want to mention that we've been on TikTok for about a year now, trying new things, trying to reach a new audience.
Give us a follow.
So if you're on TikTok and you didn't realize that Sports Radio 610 is on there, you can get clips from the shows on TikTok. We do that.
I think that Dana Brown's best decision this year was one that Seth and I were actually privileged enough to see the very first seedlings being planted.
That's right. Y'all were up there.
Spring training. We were up there in spring training for a week in late February, and we saw Cam Smith's debut where he hit two home runs. We actually ran into his mom outside the ballpark after the game with his grandmother and another woman who I think said she's his aunt, yeah, but might have been one of those close friends of the mom who just calls herself Auntie Barb or whatever.
That works.
But we ran into them, and they were couldn't have been nicer people. He continued throughout spring training to just lace the ball everywhere. Yeah. Cam Smith, he was awesome, and created a lot of debate as to whether or not he should be on the team coming out of spring training. I would imagine if you had taken a poll the beginning of spring training, before that debut, should Cam Smith be on the big league roster coming out of spring training? People would have said, hell no. He's played a couple months worth of minor league games in the Cubs system, and that's it. He's 22 years old. You don't want to ruin the poor
kid. You don't want to ruin him, which logic I hated, by the way, but is, at least at the time, conventional logic.
But again, this is before I'd seen him swing a bat. I would have said, no, don't do – like, you're right, conventional wisdom says don't do that.
Yeah.
I think if you had still taken a poll, even as spring training wore on, certainly there'd be way more people than initially that said he should be on the big league ball club coming out of spring training. At the very least, he showed that he could hit what in spring training is the equivalent of like upper level minor league or bad major league pitching, but he hit it well. He had like an OPS in the four digits and he hit for power and all those things. It was a fairly bold decision for Dana Brown to take Cam Smith back to Houston from West Palm Beach. I think, you know, just do it with the minimal amount of minor league experience he'd had. And certainly early on this season, it looked like it might have been the wrong decision. He was batting 205 in early May. Like, he looked overwhelmed at times.
He looked like he could use some more minor league experience.
That's the best way to put it. That's the easiest way to put it. He looked like he could use some seasoning in the minor leagues. But then something happened, you know, and I thought they handled him really well, even in the face of criticism from me when they were giving him multiple days off. I'm like, why are you giving him days off? Like, if you're going to have him here, play him. But as it turns out, those days off were things that he could tweak some things. And sometimes watching as opposed to participating helps certain guys. This we know, he's been excellent since, you know, mid-May, June. And right now, where this lineup is, where you're missing Isak Paredes, Yordan Alvarez, Jeremy Pena, Jake Myers. I mean, that's four every day counting on these guys. I'll say stalwarts. I mean, Jake Myers has become a stalwart in center field this year.
This year, yes.
This version of Jake Myers. And the other three are all-stars. I know Yordan wasn't this year, but he's an all-star caliber player. If you hadn't kept Cam Smith up here, I mean, what are you trotting out there? I mean, you're probably trotting Cam Smith out there, but not the version that allowed him. Cam Smith would probably be on this team by now, just given the spate of injuries that they had. Bryce Matthews is here.
You didn't even mention that Chaz McCormick had been hurt. That would be a candidate for right field, right? Mm-hmm. If there's no – let's imagine this world where Cam Smith doesn't exist or he doesn't come back in the Kyle Tucker trade.
Yeah.
Who are some of the prime candidates to take the mantle in right field? Chaz would have to be one of them. And he's either been hurt or not good for most of the year.
Yeah, well, for most of 2 years now. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
But this, especially this year. That's a great point. This Cam Smith thing, if we're going to give Dana Brown props, and that's what I'm doing here, I think his most important decision has been not just the Kyle Tucker trade. because you're kind of bringing that in, and that should be mentioned. Like, yeah, Dana Brown also, you know, this isn't somebody inherited from James Click and,
right.
or Jeff Luhnow, and you're deciding to bring him up. This is somebody you went and made a mandatory element of that deal. We're not doing this deal unless Cam Smith is part of it.
Drove a hard line.
Yeah, so to drive that hard line, to dig your feet in and say, we're only doing this trade if we get Cam Smith. And then to, in the face of many critical folks, to say we're going to bring, he's going to be our starting everyday right fielder, and we're going to roll with the punches with this thing. And then to roll with the punches. There would have been GMs that would have used that start for Cam Smith as an excuse. I think in a weird way, I think the biggest thing where they put themselves out over their skis with having to keep Cam Smith was that video they did announcing him making the team where they had his whole family in town and whatnot.
Yeah.
That video
had his family come in and tell him.
Walk into the clubhouse. Yeah. Yeah. Like that video looks seriously stupid if you send him down to Sugarland.
And Chaz is in that video too, by the way.
He is
in that video. Just looking like, oh, what's happening to me?
Exactly. I think this was his most important decision of the year. Given where this team is right now, given the injuries, you look at that lineup, and yesterday notwithstanding where you got contributions from everybody, let's face it, day to day you look at that lineup and they trot that lineup out there, you're like, man, if whoever's starting for the other team on the mound, if whoever's the starting pitcher, if he can just keep with this lineup, Altuve, Christian Walker, who's hit better of late, God, who else? Cam Smith. You know, like that's like Cam Smith, maybe Yiner. Like, the rest of it is
Dubon's
just. Dubon's had moments. Caratini had a nice weekend.
Yeah.
You know, but like.
He's been DHing for one of your, because he's a switch hitter, one of your few left-handed batting options.
Again, other than Dubon, maybe, none of these guys are starting for you in a game where you got to put your best lineup out there. Dubon is in, you know, like Dubon is probably in your best lineup even when you have all those guys healthy.
Yeah.
Because second base, when you had Altuve in left field, second base was Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah.
But Cam Smith and what he's becoming and what he's become. I mean, his season numbers are in the 270s, somewhere like that. Like he's what he is right now is what he's been since the month of May. And that's a guy who's a consistent 300 hitter right now for this team.
I think it was a bold move to put Cam Smith on the roster given his lack of minor league experience and how soon it's been since he was drafted.
Yeah.
But I think just from looking at him play or watching him play, it was bold, but you could follow the logic in that decision and say, hey, okay, well, he's making a bold move, but we get it. The part that I thought was just really, really ballsy was the position change, saying, hey, we want him in this lineup so damn bad that we're going to try him out there in right field in a place that he's never played, and he's not an outfielder by any stretch, but we think he's a good enough athlete and a good enough baseball player to figure it out, to where we're going to let him figure it out in the major freaking leagues.
Yeah.
The guy's hit before, and he might just be ready to hit. Okay, some guys are ready before others, and so maybe he's gifted in that way. I could see that. Moving a guy from third to right and not doing it in the grapefruit or just in spring training or doing it just in the minor leagues, but saying, hey, no, on our opening day, big league roster, that dude's going to be the right fielder. Like that combination of decisions makes it even more bold and even more impressive. But this is the thing about Dana Brown that I want to point out that I love is sort of manifesting itself. This is scouting guy GM.
Yeah.
If there's nothing else that Dana Brown knows how to do, if he don't know how to negotiate a contract or understand the value of a contract and arbitration and all that, he should know a damn good baseball player when he sees one, because that's how he made his bones.
Yep.
That's how he came up, was as a scout. He's a scout, right? So the fact that he would have the foresight to know, you know, Cam Smith, I can see this translating to the big leagues and being something that we absolutely have to have. You got to give him credit for that.
Well, and to know, and nobody knows anything in the moment. It's all just predictions and probabilities that guys are going to make it. But to have the gut instinct that even if he gets off to a slow start, it's not going to ruin this kid.
Yeah.
You know, he scouted him when he was at Florida State. So he, you know, even though he got drafted by the Cubs, he had plenty of intel on him. And obviously, before you make the trade for him, you gather plenty more intel that you need to before you make that move. And I'm guessing everybody that he talked to said that the kid is mentally, he's a very strong player.
Yeah.
The ups and downs are not going to phase him the way they might your garden variety minor leaguer. And a great point too, B. Scott, on playing right field. Like, it's not just that he put him out in right field. He is a good, very good right fielder.
Yeah.
He, like, the how That's the thing that fascinates me the most about Cam Smith is he seems to be a quick study. Like, he's become a really good right fielder fast. He in going through the ups and downs of hitting, came through it. Like, he's evolving at like, you know, when you play a podcast at like 2x speed? He's like a podcast at 2x speed right now. He's progressing as a major league hitter at 2.5x speed right now.
And it's why I really appreciate Dana Brown going against the conventional wisdom, because he didn't just take the conventional wisdom and say, oh, well, guys typically aren't ready this soon and he's going to need some seasoning. He looked at this isolated situation, looked at this individual player, say, hey, I understand what conventional wisdom says, but what about this guy?
Mm-hmm.
What about this particular guy? What does my eye tell me? What does my data tell me? What does all the information that's available to me tell me about this particular guy? Not the previous guy, not the next guy, this one.
Yep.
And made this determination. You got to give him credit.
No doubt. Texter, I was one of the people who said bring Cam up a month into the season to get that extra year of control. That is a separate argument, I think, that getting the extra year. And that's fair, and ultimately that may come back to bite them, that they don't get that extra year of team control of Cam Smith down the road. My feeling at the time about that was you're in a championship window.
Yeah.
This is not making decisions on George Springer to manipulate his service time to get the extra year where you're not really winning anything. Similar, well, same mindset, but also this is not manipulating Yordan Alvarez when you have such a stacked team that you don't need him until June to get that extra. And ultimately, they signed Yordan to a contract extension, made it a moot point. But this Astros team is sitting in the middle of that.
Yeah.
They're not so bad that they can manipulate service time by just leaving better players down there. And they're not so good that we've got good enough guys here already where we're going to win 105 games. We can thus manipulate service time of our best minor leaguers. They're in the middle where even before all these injuries, it was all hands on deck. You know, they lost Bregman and Tucker, you know, and they've been losing guys every year.
Given where you are at this stage or wherever we are in the window, whether you think it's closing, we're deep into this thing now. Given where they are, where the Astros are right now, where is Cam Smith more valuable to you as the Astros fan? Let's forget Dana Brown for a second. To you as the Astros fan, where is Cam Smith more valuable to you in this window? On this team right now or on the hypothetical team 4, 5, and 6 years from now that we don't even know what that team is going to look like?
And
we're talking about manipulating the service time.
Yeah.
Like it's more valuable to me. Today is more valuable to me than 5 years from now as it pertains to Cam Smith specifically.
Yeah,
I still care about the Astros in 5 or 6 years if I'm still here.
My love of fried foods.
Come on now. Let's be real.
Exactly. Am I worried about year 7 of Cam Smith?
Come on. The way I eat them blueberry muffins, man. Let's be real, man. Yes. I'm worried about it right today.
Someone's asking, did I see John Singleton yesterday in the dugout? Yes.
He's there, man.
He's back.
He is back.
Mac, that was the other big thing. The two biggest takeaways from that week of spring training that Seth and I went to was A, Cam Smith. B, John Singleton looks like he's getting ready to go on the Mr. America circuit.
That's right.
If he doesn't,
he was slimmed down. Yeah,
he just looked in shape.
Yeah,
yeah, he was
like he was trying to make the team.
Like yeah,
right,
right. 12 years in, he's like, you know what I need to do? I really need to have an off season program where I get in shape for this baseball.
Now's the time to do it.
God, I hope he gets a shot, man. I'd love to see John Singleton. Hey, they're 1-0 with him hanging out in the dugout. Yes, Texter, that is who you saw in the dugout.
I just love that he's like the cat with the 9 lives, man. This dude will not die. I respect it.
The only players that have ever been on the Astros 3 times, you may have heard this on the broadcast yesterday. Callis had this. Are both on the team right now.
Whitcomb?
Nope. No, not.
You don't mean being brought up.
I don't mean being brought up and back. Like major league stints where they left to go to another team and came back.
So Naris.
Yeah.
And John Singleton.
And that's it. Those are the only two in the history of the team to have 3 different stints like that with a team where they left to go to another team and come back. At least that's how I heard it yesterday, is that the only three that's happened. Text in if you were watching the broadcast and you heard that. Did I hear that right or am I butchering this?
Lifelong Astros.
Naris was jacked to come back. I saw an interview with him and Julia Morales. He was very excited to come back.
I don't know if they go in any kind of team Hall of Fame or anything, but there should be a special little window for guys like that, or a little special section for guys like that, especially as they played on these teams. They're really good. So.
Cam was in the leadoff spot on Sunday. Someone texted that in. Okay. Did I say he was in a different spot? That's always my reaction. Where did I say? Yeah, he was in the leadoff spot. He's the only place he hasn't batted this year has been the three hole. He's batted in every other. That's crazy.
That is crazy.
That's almost as crazy. Remember, I feel like Dubon could do this if he wanted to, but there was a player named Jose Oquendo back in the day.
Oh, yeah, I remember Jose.
He used to play for the Mets and then the Cardinals. I think he did this for the Cardinals, but he played, I think they may have had him do it in one game, but throughout the course of a season, he played all nine positions at one point. I think he even came in and threw a garbage inning in a blowout, but he played all nine positions. That would seem to be almost easier to do than batting in all nine batting slots, or at least in the similar improbability phase.
Yeah, in terms of improbability. Yeah, to do eight of the nine, and I just can't forget about this, or it's not lost on me. Guy has no experience.
Yeah,
for the most part, just no experience, and is out there like he's an 8-year pro.
And I say that, and people are going to go, "Well, Sean, there's only a few guys in baseball that could even have the skills to play all nine positions," which is true. But how often within a single season do you look at somebody and say that that's our nine hole hitter, and then a month later he's batting cleanup for you, or later in the season he's batting leadoff for you? Like those are almost as different, those spots in the batting order, as some of the positions are defensively.
Right. Most of the guys that bat seventh, eighth, and ninth, you wouldn't dream of putting them as your leadoff
or cleanup.
There's a reason why they're there.
Yeah.
Now it also does feel less likely that you would both pitch and, I know they do it in high school, but in the major leagues, that you would have a season or even a game where you would pitch and catch. It seems kind of wild.
The pitching element would obviously be you're in there in a 13-1 game and you're just, you're just trying. Good. That's exactly what I heard, Sean. Okay, good. So I didn't get that wrong. Yes, you're right. It was just Neris, but now it's Singleton with him getting called up because he was with the Mets organization.
Okay.
So he was with the Mets organization. I guess you got to leave the organization and come back to be part of this conversation.
They know where home's at.
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go. Yeah, three-time Astros. I like it.
Yep. All right. The biggest story of last week was not a sports story. Was this the most costly, really bad decision that somebody's made with something that is undefeated throughout the course of time? We will have that for you coming up next. Should have asked the audience. I'm curious. I contend putting Cam Smith on the big league roster is the best decision that Dana Brown has made this year. I'm curious what else is in the conversation for that. And maybe the trade itself that brought Cam Smith here.
This year?
This, for the 2025 season.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think anything else that I could bring up would compare. Like, I think bringing back Hector Neris could be valuable to them at some point because they've got some relief issues, at least some middle relief issues. I know Neris has been closing for the last year or two in Chicago with the Cubs. But, like, I think that can be important because they've got some relief issues. But that's not going to be as big as what Cam Smith means to the lineup.
No, and I think in a perfect world, if someone had said before the year, what do you hope Dana Brown's best decision ends up being that was made from, say, the offseason into the season? I think people would have said that Christian Walker turns out to be the anti-Jose Abreu, that he turns out to be – that Christian Walker just merely turns out to be what he was in Arizona the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been that. He's given little teases and flashes. He still just strikes out way too much for my liking. And the defense has been really good, but it's not been gold glove level good. That would have probably been the one, if I could choose one, because that's the one that could have the biggest impact for you, taking a position that's been bad the last couple years and making it really, really good. But I think it's Cam Smith for me right now.
This year, I think it's Cam Smith. What it reminds me of, and I think it's just even better than, is the decision to make Ronel Blanco a starter.
I was thinking of that, too.
That was also a Dana Brown thing. Yeah. But that was last, or maybe even the
year.
Is it
23?
I think it was 2 years ago now.
No, I think it was 24. No, because he threw the no-hitter. Remember, they got off to the horrible start last year, and he was the only good thing going for them, Ronel Blanco? It was 24. Because they got swept by the Yankees,
and
then he threw a no-hitter against the Blue Jays. That was their first win of the season last year.
Okay, so last year, the moving Ronel Blanco to being a full-time starter thought was a savvy move, and again, a scouts type of decision,
no
a scouting
doubt.
Type of decision.
Yeah.
This is along those lines, but I think even more so.
Did you get a chance to opine on this Andy Byron, the CEO of Astronomer, in any of your appearances on the station?
Not
in the
on
last
the station,
so?
I don't think. And as you can imagine, like a lot of people and like most people, I would say, it's been a big point of conversation elsewhere for me, social media, real life. But I don't think I've been able to talk about it here at the station.
The memes, this might be the most and best memed non-sports thing that's happened ever. It, like, the number of different permutations of satire,
yes,
of that video.
Everyone's gotten in on it.
Everyone has.
No one has just let this die down.
And this might be AI's best performance so far as a thing.
That's a good
I mean,
point.
Some of the videos that have been generated by AI have been incredible. But those of you who listen to the show or on social media probably know what we're talking about. But just to give you the 15-second synopsis, Andy Byron, CEO for a company called Astronomer, based out of the Boston area, was caught on the Kiss Cam. Andy Byron, married, was caught on the Kiss Cam with a woman who is not his wife, canoodling at the Coldplay concert, kind of standing behind her, arms around her, midsection, very much looking intimate, very happy when the Kiss Cam rolled around. Two of them couldn't have been happier.
Dare I say they looked in love.
They looked in love. And angles have come out since then of people filming with their iPhones, Coldplay, that have had them in the shot. And it wasn't just the two of them holding. They were kissing, and they were, I mean, it was a night.
It was a date.
Now, here's the thing. Anybody doing that with anybody other than his wife, bad, scummy, sleazy. Doing that with your HR director, her title is chief people officer.
Yeah. Not even the secretary.
No.
The HR director.
The very person who's supposed to be preventing things like this from happening within the workplace.
Yeah.
That's who he was with. So that's the story. They got caught on the Kiss Cam. Could not have looked any more guilty. They scattered. She covers her face. He ducks down. Like, they looked like two people who were cheating on their spouses, and they were. The upshot of all this is that Andy Byron has resigned from his position with the company. So this is like a growing startup company that he's the CEO for. I'm sure he got some sort of package to leave. I'm guessing he's not leaving empty-handed. But that's the update on the story. He's resigned his position with the company after he went viral on Wednesday, July 16th. So we spent the better part of the next 2 days, or at least an appropriate amount of the next 2 days on this show talking about that. So he's leaving the company. Dude, I mean, think about what 4 seconds of a camera passing by ends up costing this guy.
Yeah. Yeah, it not just any old regular kind of job.
No.
The CEO of a lucrative company.
His soon-to-be ex-wife is going to be so rich.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
she's
man.
She's going to be rolling in it.
Single guys out there, if you're headed up to Boston. Now, she's got 3 kids, so you got to, you know, keep that in mind. But she is,
that is
the sugariest of sugar mamas.
That will
right
be
there.
Worth the check if you can get it. I don't understand, and I'm not trying to condone any of the activity or any of that, any of the behavior, if you will. But I don't understand how this happens, because or assuming that he's either happily married or doesn't want to get divorced, at the very least doesn't want this public shame, because you could see that just based off of their reaction on being on the camera.
Yeah.
I don't understand how this happens from these two standpoints.
Right.
If you're cheating and you're in public, then it seems like PDA would be out of the question.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we're at the same place at the same time, but we're not holding hands. We're not kissing. We're not snuggling.
Right.
We're not doing any of that. Or if you do decide to do that, to me, on the front end, you also should have made the decision that you're okay with the result. Like, with the, hey, if this means that my marriage is over, then it's got to mean that I'm sick of the marriage to begin
with. Right,
right.
I'm ready to split everything in half with my wife.
I've got a foot out the door anyway.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. If neither one of those two things are the case, like, I don't get how that happens. Either we have an understanding that this is not how we behave in public, or if this is how we behave in public, we are assuming the risk with it and accepting that as a possibility. I don't get how you just unwittingly are out there cheating on your spouse and you're actually somebody.
B. Scott.
And then you get caught on camera. I don't get it.
It's undefeated.
It is undefeated. It is, but it seemed like he was going to get it no matter what. You know, I don't feel like it was a deal breaker. Hey, we got to cuddle at the Coldplay concert.
Yeah.
We going to the Coldplay concert.
Right.
And we're allowed to be at the same place at the same time without anybody suspecting anything. We're coworkers. We can be friends. As long as I ain't over there cuddling you like we in the ninth grade. You know what I mean? Like, they look like they were up against the locker. You remember in school when you'd see that couple against the locker? Oh, like, yeah. There they go again.
Yep.
They look like that couple.
They did. Yeah, they did. The little kind of behind spooning thing going on.
Yeah.
The what should they done was the big title. Like, what, obviously, if they're going to get caught on camera, what should you have done is just no sell it. Just stay, you know, just if they just act like a couple, the only thing that can get them then is if somebody notices them and they're like, hey, is that Andy? And forget what her, Kristen, I think her name was, the HR. The other thing, too, I'm wondering, I'm guessing that him resigning has like 10% to do with him stepping out on his wife and 90% to do with him doing it with another executive with the company. Like, if he just got caught on there with his neighbor or something like that. Is that something where the company, I don't know. I'm asking the question. I've never cheated on a spouse, and the only time I've gotten fired from a job is when my company got bought and they didn't need me anymore.
Right.
So I don't know what the process is for something like this. So is that what a big part of it is? Is like not that he was cheating, but who he was cheating with?
I think it's got to be a big part of it. But can I sneak in? I don't know what the percentage is, but can I sneak in a little percentage of there?
Sure.
Of the response, like the reaction, like the caught red handed, and not just like Kristen. She kind of just goes away a little bit, and you can tell she's embarrassed. My man,
he ducks,
yeah. Which is like doesn't really give leadership, like. How are you going to give direction at the company now?
Right.
How are we going to respect you? Not because it's one thing to cheat on your spouse. We're all adults. Like, that's not going to shock anybody or mean that you can't be a good leader.
Yeah.
But how do you respond to crisis? How do you respond in the moment? Like, just, I think all of it was just a poor look. He made a poor decision and then craters in the moment of getting caught red-handed of, like, the shame of it all. I'm going to duck out of the way. Like, he did not look like a leader.
No, not at all.
I'll just put it that way.
Not at all.
He did not look like the CEO of anything
in that moment. You might crack under questioning, Henry. Like, that's what I think of in Goodfellas.
Yes.
You might crack under questioning. That is somebody who would rat everybody out.
Yes.
If Andy Byron were in your mob crew, if he were one of your soldiers, if you were a capo for the Soprano family, and Andy Byron gets caught selling a vial of H or something like that by the DEA, he's ratting everybody out.
Yeah.
That's, you know what? This is a great litmus test.
Yeah.
How would you handle being put on Kiss Cam? Tells me how you would handle, that tells me, well, the fact that he's on there with somebody who's not his wife already tells you what the trust factor is with the guy in the first place.
Sure.
But the fact that he handled it, great point, B. Scott, the way that he did, that he ducked out the way that he did,
he
rat everybody
more,
out.
Yeah, that speaks more to the, like, leadership, abilities and that sort of thing. It's like, how does somebody respond to a crisis? Like, just turn around to each other, give each other a high five.
That's
and
it,
like
man.
Try to throw them off the scent. None of that. It's like, oh my God, we've been caught.
Second thing he should have done, probably, if he's trying to get away with it, and again, this comes from zero experience of doing this, but if he made it a company outing, if he bought like 10 tickets, and then you go to the outing with all the people from I'm not saying you can canoodle there at all, but you can spend your time with her, and then whatever you do before or after is up to you. But then you're going to the Coldplay concert, and if you get caught on Kiss Cam, you can do that thing where it's clearly two people who aren't in a relationship,
right?
And they shake hands or something like
that's
that.
That's what I'm saying.
The guy kisses his beer. That's okay. There's the lesson in the whole thing, and this goes for married couples, couples that are just dating. If you just to flat out, if you just want to not deal with the Kiss Cam and be funny about it, don't kiss the person next to you. Kiss the alcoholic beverage that you have with, right? That's always very funny when guys do that.
Yeah, man.
Kiss your beer.
There are a
it's
lot
gonna
of ways.
Piss your girlfriend off, but if you get into the habit of doing that, then someday when you're in an extramarital affair, you will not lose hundreds of millions of dollars as the CEO of a startup.
Yeah, man.
You're welcome.
The Kiss Cam ain't new, and neither is cheating.
Right.
Didn't look like their first rodeo, if I'm
did
being quite frank about it. And also, I do want to point this out since I haven't been able to talk about this. They look like they were around people that they know. Like, they didn't seem like they were there together, like, in some type of rogue mission.
Yeah.
Like, they were there with others who at least know them somehow, some way.
There was a false report that the woman next to Kristen Cabot was some person in her department. It was incorrect. Apparently the reports are they were just the two of them there, that there weren't people from Astronomer there that I saw.
Well, maybe not from Astronomer, but
people they knew.
They didn't seem like they were there with just amongst a bunch of strangers.
Not. Yeah, maybe
you
not.
Know, so something's going on here. Something's up. Obviously.
All right. Yeah, clearly.
Something's going on.
Clearly. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. B. Scott in for Seth Payne for the next few days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We'll be out of Texans training camp on Wednesday this week at 6 o'clock. Cannot wait. Football season almost here. Speaking of which, The Athletic, Vic Tufor of The Athletic, did his best bets on over-under season win totals for the entire NFL. You will never believe who his number one best bet is for the NFL season for season win totals. Over or under? We will tell you who that is coming up next. All right, Payne and Pendergast, Brandon Scott in for Seth C. Payne. Seth out for the next few days. He'll be back on Thursday. Training camp starting up on Wednesday this week for the Houston Texans. The 2025 season is upon us. And B. Scott, you know I love me a good wager. Love me a good over-under. I like season win total bets because they don't have the heavy, week-to-week treachery of betting, five or six games on Sunday. Not that I don't have the occasional Sunday where I'll think about a wager, but I like season win totals mostly because on Sundays I'm working. I got to be focused on the Texans. So season win totals kind of sit in the background for you. You know, you're not worried about, I got enough to worry about with my fantasy teams and with the Texans. You know, I don't need that big money out there. So season win totals are out heading into training camp. So this is all post-draft, post-offseason. You know, we now know Aaron Rodgers is a Pittsburgh Steeler. We've had some late in the game kind of signings going on, stuff like that. That's the biggest one. Vic Tufor of The Athletic has his predictions for all 32 teams. However, like any good writer, any good handicapper, especially someone doling out advice, he picks out about a half dozen or so that are his best bets, his favorite ones. The very first best bet in Vic Tufor of The Athletic's article with all 32 teams in their selection, the very first bet, over 9.5 wins plus 100, which means even money. It means you bet 100, you win 100.
Yeah.
So that's the juice on there. Over 9.5 wins, your Houston Texans.
I'll take it.
Best bet, over 9.5 wins. You think it's does it feel so good to you that you would give it to a friend or colleague as betting advice? Best bet, Houston. I'll read what he says here in a second, but I want your gut reaction to that.
So much so that I have been concerned that I'm being unreasonable by, in some ways, being bored by the Texans' success. Like, I think, and this is an issue for me, I think the Texans, I'm willing to guarantee 10 wins this year.
Guarantee.
I feel like it's, and this is the step that I want them to make. Just to kind of go on a quick Texans tangent here.
Yeah.
I am done with the 10-7. I feel ungrateful because it's been fun. We were talking about this earlier. It's been a fun ride. It's been a really good time.
Yeah.
But I'm ready for them to take that next step and be something other than the 10-win division winner in the wild card that they host. They're invitational now. And like, do something more than that. Do something greater than that.
Yeah.
I think it's a solid bet. A really, really good bet. Maybe even, as Vic says here, the best bet that they'll be a 10-win team. What I ain't willing to bet on is that they'll do anything more than that. You know what I mean?
Like a run in the playoffs.
Exactly. That's the step that I want. I feel pretty damn good about them winning 10 games and winning a playoff game at home, because that's what it feels like they are about.
I do too.
So I can see this being a best bet, and I would take it. Absolutely.
You're on Vic Tufor's train on this one.
I'm with him.
I like the Texans a lot too. Here's what he says. For having a disappointing season last year, the Texans still won 10 games, going over their projected total. They were 9.5 last year at this time as well. Only trailed the Chiefs by 1 point entering the fourth quarter of the divisional playoff round. They were 4-1 in the games where they had both Nico Collins and Stephon Diggs, before injuries and predictable play calling exposed a terrible offensive line. All right, let's dig into that for a second. They were 4-1 in the games where they had both Nico Collins and Stephon Diggs. It's so sad, man, that they only had those two together on
Hardly
the field.
Hardly knew you for
five games. That's gut-wrenching to go back and take a look at.
And then all of the key weapons missed extended time from Joe.
Joe missed some games.
To Nico, obviously Diggs, and of course Tank at the end.
Tank at the end of the year, yeah. And Dalton Schultz just wasn't as good as he was the year before.
On top of all of that.
On top of all of that. Yeah. The predictable play calling, so the two things, before injuries and predictable play calling exposed the terrible offensive line, there's nothing you can do about injuries. Have they addressed the predictable play calling? I don't think we know yet. We haven't watched Nick Caley call a play yet.
Yeah, it is, I think, by nature of the fact that we haven't seen him unpredictable, at least for now. Going into week one, he'll be unpredictable, yeah. I feel like, at the very least. We'll see how it goes after that.
And yet they're playing the one team that he actually worked for last year. You know, like if
it, oh, that's right.
You know, like
damn
it's,
it.
That's, I mean,
damn it, Sean.
We're probably overthinking a little.
I actually didn't think about that part of it, but you're right.
Here's the rest of what Vic says. C.J. Stroud was sacked 54 times and was understandably a little bit jumpy. The O-line's still a big concern, but Caley will be more innovative than Bobby Sloak with X's and O's. And just to hit pause on that for a second, I think it's do we know how unpredictable Nick Caley's going to be compared to Bobby Sloak? No, but I almost feel like a little like the offensive line. It can't be any worse. Can't be any worse. Right. I feel like they've done that. The Texans have done their due diligence, at least to the extent that you know this guy's going to be better than Bobby Sloak was last year.
Yeah, that part feels like the bare minimum.
We like the additions of Christian Kirk and rookies Jaden Higgins and Jalen Knoll to go with Collins, and I think that's the other question because they talk about you didn't have Nico and Stephon Diggs for much of the year together. Did they address, and you're not going to have Tank this year, presumably. You know, like I think they're operating with the idea Tank won't be back.
That feels pretty sick.
Yeah, like is Higgins and Knoll, very unknown, along with Kirk, very banged up the last few years. Is that enough to where you feel like, okay, they've rebuilt the receiver room? I feel good about it. I think Higgins is going to be a really good player. I think Knoll is going to be a good player. And my biggest concern out of the three is that Kirk stays healthy, honestly. I think the rookies are going to contribute at a correct rookie level for where they were drafted.
Yeah, and Kirk, I know he hasn't been healthy the last season or two, but he was healthy that first year in Jacksonville. And when he is healthy, he's hyper-productive. And honestly, man, Higgins and Knoll, I mean, I don't know how good they're going to be, like what their ceiling is. I have no idea on either. But I do expect both to contribute right away. Like, I expect the learning curve to, if not necessarily be flat, but yeah. I don't think it's going to be a steep learning curve for either one of these guys. I expect them to be instant contributors to this offense and instant weapons for C.J. Stroud.
Maybe this is with the benefit of now knowing that Nick Caserio is pretty good at drafting, but I feel, you know, Nico was a third-round pick. I feel way better about both of these guys than I did about Nico Collins. You know, Nico had taken a year off because of the COVID year and things like that. But I feel good about both guys. He finishes up by saying, with their great pass rush, it's impossible not to see the Texans winning at least 10 games for a third straight season. The overall caveat with all this is that CJ's got to be healthy for the Texans to fulfill. How many wins is CJ Stroud worth to this team, do you think? What would a Davis Mills quarterbacked Texans team go over? If you think that these Texans are, I'd say, a 12-5 team, right? Because you think they're going to win more than 10 games. Let's call it 12-5. What would a Davis Mills quarterback Texans team?
I think C.J. Stroud's worth a minimum of 4 wins to the team.
This feels like a team that struggles to get to .500 with Davis at quarterback.
Yeah. And again, the defense could be the key here because I think just the defense alone could help win them some games.
Yes.
And Davis isn't the worst quarterback in the world. Mm-hmm. So I feel like they could kind of accidentally even win 6 or 7 games.
If Davis Mills were the quarterback of this team for 17 games, and don't come after me on the text page, like, why are you even bringing this up, Sean? I'm bringing it up. It's a topic. I'm not jinxing CJ with injury or whatever.
Yeah, man, we got 2 days till training camp.
Yeah. So I'm dream just with us preemptively putting that out there. I would, if Davis Mills were the quarterback of this team, just based on how good the defense is and the remodeling they've done of some of the skill positions, I'd definitely go over on 6.5, and I think I'd go over on 7.5. I think, could they get to 8-9 with this defense and Davis Mills at quarterback? I think they could. I think they've built the offensive line is a huge question mark. I get that. But it's not like CJ relies on escapability to do what he does. I think he's more escapable than we thought he was based on some of the things we saw in the postseason with him.
Sure.
And I think he is going to run a little bit more this year when the opportunity presents itself.
But even the arm and the accuracy, man, Davis is fine.
4 games is a lot in the NFL. Like to say,
yeah.
You know, like I, that's, you're obviously counting on Nick Caley being able to scheme some things open and whatnot. You know, that's a big bet on Nick Caley if I say that. Would you go over 6.5 wins if Davis Mills were the quarterback?
I would not. I would lose all faith and confidence, and it's not a shot at Davis. It would be
if you knew
probably even more so because of the existence of CJ Stroud. Like, yeah. If we were just still here doing the Davis Mills experiment.
Yeah.
Then maybe
that's what I'm kind of talking about.
Maybe I would be able to talk myself into it. But since we've seen the other side, since we've seen the light, I don't know how to do that. I will say this just to kind of to stay with that point.
Yeah.
If Davis Mills was a quarterback, the existence of Nick Chubb on this team would be such a bigger story.
That's fair.
Because they'd be
that's
so really reliant on the run game.
They
like
would.
You would really be relying on, not just hoping like I was earlier, but really relying on Nick Chubb to recapture some of his old self.
All right. You and I are on the same page, though. Over 9.5, for sure. All right. The Astros get a huge win yesterday. I think the biggest win of the year yesterday for the Astros. But it masks some of the other things going on with this team right now, which have gotten to a DEFCON 2 or DEFCON 1 level. In the injury room. We will get to that. We'll talk about the importance of what happened this weekend coming up next.